dominance, our Imperius leader.
And welcome back to Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want, just don't call me late for dinner. And it's Tuesday at 7 o'clock in Las Vegas, which means it's 9 o'clock if you're in the Midwest in Chicago. Or, what the hell is it, 10 o'clock if you're on the East Coast in New York. And, of course, the Golden Globe Awards were just announced, so we will intersperse our discussions with, starting to get to the cough switch in time, but yeah. With Golden Globes opinions and things like that. And the program is podcasted on LVRocks.com. Click on, go to LVRocks.com and click on podcasts. And it takes you to where all the programs are podcasted from. You pick and choose all the shows that are on there, The Strip, Daily Noise, all the other programs in addition to Subject to Discussion. And tonight in a little while we'll be joined by the birthday boy, Justin from the Donkelfin blog. For our political discussion, he told me he'll be doing his report in his birthday suit, so that should be enticing to our audio listeners. And then in the second hour will be Philip Wynn, who is the co-owner of blogcritics.org. He'll be along for a pop culture discussion, among other things, be King Kong and some of the other items. And then Judy will be along, and Hang Buck, that's who the lady was last week. I couldn't remember her name for the life of me. And they'll be on to talk about all things sci-fi, and they're going to report about the Battlestar Galactica Companion. So that'll be interesting. And Subject to Discussion is archived over on SpankWagon.net. SpankWagon's on every Friday from 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific time until 9 o'clock Pacific time here on LVRocks.com. And I was listening to a little commercial that Diggs was doing for Daily Noise. Daily Noise is on at 12 noon if you're in the Midwest and 1 o'clock if you're on the East Coast during the day. So anyway, and what else? The website is subject2discussion.com. An email is subject2@lvrocks.com. So thank you, everybody, for listening to the show last week. Did very well in the podcast numbers. Thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for listening live. And first of all, before I get to the news to you, and a little bit before I get to the news to me, I want to mention about this thing in the USA Today about Bush admitting there's 30,000 deaths of civilians in Iraq. So it's the first time the administration has ever put a number on the Iraqi civilians killed in the conflict ever. So that was interesting. And also, on the below the fold, as they say in the business, about the more immigrants than ever flowing to the USA, nearly half do so illegally. Now, how the hell does the Census Department count the legal? If they know they're legally, somebody's counting. How the hell are they counting these people? I don't know. It says 7.9 million immigrants come into the USA since the year 2000. Almost half, or 3.7 million, entered illegally, according to an analysis of the census data. So, I mean, how do they know? But I don't know. So we'll see. And so we'll go over the Love Your Rock, Cylon Mac. Wow, we got a Cylon in the chat room there. I'm going to go through a little bit of the what was news to me from during the week. Of course, yesterday we had the, or this morning, wherever your time zone you're in, at 12:02 our time here, Tookie Williams was put to death. That's how the Tookie crumbles, I guess they're saying. Tookie Williams, the co-founder of the Crips gang, L.A. gang, was put to death by lethal injection, and I was watching the Fox News coverage of it. And I was switching back and forth between Fox and CNN. MSNBC didn't pick it up, or at least I'm aware of. They're still running headliners and legends. And during the press conference, they kept cutting away because now Fox, they used to have Rita Cosby doing the weekend show there. And every time, of course, she's on MSNBC now. And when the pool camera would go to Rita Cosby or when she started talking, the Fox would cut back away to the guy in the studio in New York, Bob Sellers, talking. I thought it was kind of weird. And CNN didn't cut away at all. They kept it on Rita Cosby. So, I mean, I just thought it was a little odd how they, you know, they won't even acknowledge the woman, you know. They have to put her name down, but you know, they just kept cutting away from Rita Cosby. And then also we had locally the Lady Luck Casino in downtown Las Vegas is going to lay off hundreds of workers. Apparently they're going to gut the inside of the hotel and remodel it and everything else. That place has been down on its luck for years down there at Lady Luck. Lady Luck's in downtown Las Vegas, and 99, the main drag of downtown Las Vegas, is kind of off of 3rd Street there. So, I don't know, who knows if it's going to reopen. They say they will, but you never know about those things. And then Sunday, where are we at here? This is also a little bit of a TV news kind of funny thing that happened. Fox affiliate, I got this from TV Newser on Sunday, that Fox affiliate was running an interview with an eyewitness from the plane crash at Midway Airport in Chicago. But the interview was actually for... It was for Greta Van Susteren's program, but also CNN's Anderson Cooper 360 cut to the interview as well. So the interview was shown on both networks, just that it was meant for Greta Van Susteren's program, and Anderson Cooper 360 also picked up the interview. So that was weird. So the Anderson Cooper show, the reporter talking to Greta. Of course, the CNN people didn't know who the reporter was talking to, but if you're watching Fox, you knew that the reporter was talking to Greta Van Susteren, not Anderson Cooper. So that was a little unusual. And then Saturday, Richard Pryor passed away. I remember him from the legendary Superman 3 movie. So it was that movie that drove the Superman franchise into the gutter. And then the Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, actually finished off that franchise. So, and then also on Saturday, Eugene McCarthy died. He was the Democratic senator from Minnesota. And he's the one who forced Lyndon Baines Johnson not to run in 68 and led to that whole, RFK ran. And then, of course, he was assassinated at that hotel in California. There was, I think, it's being bulldozed as we speak and all that. And the 68 convention in Chicago, they wound up nominating Hubert Humphrey to run for president. And he barely lost to Nixon. And what else? Friday, Howard Stern was on O'Reilly. O'Reilly ran a three-part interview with Howard Stern, saying that Stern says he sees a therapist four days a week, and has helped him make him a better dad. And he also told O'Reilly he has no friends whatsoever. He does not have a single friend outside, his wife, or his girlfriend, whoever that is, but does not have a friend. And he actually admitted he thinks that's one of his weakest points in his life, that he does not have any friends. And also, Friday was the last Connected Coast to Coast, which was with Ron Reagan and that hot Monica Crowley. The show went off the air Friday, and we remember him from Tony Masulis was on this program. He was their internet reporter, and so that went down in flames. That show lasted a year, and a lot of people were surprised it lasted that long because the ratings have been bad since it started. And, of course, Thursday, the plane slid off the runway at Midway, crushing two cars and killing a six-year-old boy. What else? Thursday, Rumsfeld, supposedly he's planning his own exit strategy as Secretary of Defense, and supposedly Connecticut Democrat Senator Joe Lieberman is a leading candidate to replace him. So that'd be interesting if that happens. He can plan a strategy to get himself out of office, but he can't plan an exit strategy to get out of Iraq. So that's, ridiculous. And also Wednesday, we had the air marshal shoots and kills that lunatic gun off that plane in Miami who's suffering from bipolar disorder. Said he had a bomb in his backpack, and the air marshals blew him away. So anyway, that was the news to me. So we'll mosey on down to the news to you. And this is from, I got them in reverse order here. Oh, well. Damn printer. I got my... Damn it. I didn't check it. I thought it'd be right. The printer put everything in reverse order. Oh, man. Pardon the pause. Oh, man. Oh, well. This is from last Wednesday. I'll go reverse now. Save the current stuff for last. Coke de launch, coffee-infused Coke Black. This is from Coca-Cola. And last Wednesday, the number one soft drink, yada, yada, yada. They're going to introduce a coffee-infused soft drink called Coca-Cola Black. So it's going to be a coffee-flavored version of Coke. So it'll be a mid-calorie drink similar to Coca-Cola's C2, which was launched in April 2004. So it contains half the sugar and calories and carbohydrates of regular cola. So I don't know.
What the shit is that?
Yeah, I don't know about that. A coffee-flavored Coke. Ugh. This is also from last Wednesday. Inmate arrested shortly after his release. This is from, where are we at here? Alabama. It was only a small taste of freedom. David Mulligan, 21, served 25 days for drunken driving, was released at 7 a.m. on Tuesday. Authorities allege he stole a van 3 minutes later. A man who lives a block from the Lemon Creek Correctional Center left his 1997 Dodge van running to warm up. There you go. When he came out of the house, it was gone. 2 hours later, the owner called the police on his cell phone, said he was following the stolen van in traffic. So the guy, 3 minutes out of jail, and he steals a van. He's going right back to jail now. So there you go. And it's also, this is from Thursday, last Thursday, U.S. life expectancy hits all-time high. A century of nearly uninterrupted medical improvements and longer lives. It looks like the baby boomers could screw things up. Half Americans 55 to 64, including the oldest of the baby boomers, have high blood pressure, and 2 in 5 are obese. So there we go. Our life expectancy of the older, the senior citizens, is going up, but the new retirees coming on, the baby boomers, actually they have more problem with obesity and high blood pressure. So this means that this large group of aging Americans is in worse shape in some respects than those born a decade earlier. So also, infant mortality in 2003 dropped. United States, for a while, I remember reading that, has had the highest or one of the highest percentages of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, in the industrialized world for some odd reason. And what else? Prescription drugs were the fastest growing expenditure. Spending on prescriptions rose 11% in 2003. And 28% of all adults reported recent low back pain. So, yeah, they got Walgreens in every corner. No wonder they're all reporting record prescriptions going up and everything else. And this is also from last Thursday. A cop said to taser partner after soda fight. A police officer had been charged with using a taser on his partner during an argument over whether they should stop for a soft drink. Ronald Dupuy, is a Frenchman, was charged Wednesday with assault and could face up to 3 months in jail if convicted. The six-year veteran was fired after the November 3rd incident. So they began arguing over, demanded that she stop, it was a female partner, if she stopped their car at a store so they could buy a soft drink, according to the police. The two then struggled over the steering wheel. Dupuy hit her leg with his department-issued taser, so she was not seriously hurt. So what the hell? Unbelievable. Next one is from Thursday from Louisville, Kentucky. Your brothers die in separate car crashes minutes apart. Man, I should be the parents of these two. Two brothers died within minutes of each other last Wednesday, in separate traffic crashes in a rural county where their father is a sheriff's deputy. Rory McDowell, 23, and Corey McDowell, 21, were pronounced dead a couple miles from the home they shared with their mother. And the father is Andy McDowell. He was not on duty at the time, was taken to Rory's crash. He later was driven past Corey's Fury crash, not knowing his younger son was involved in it. Oh, man. This is a quote from the county coroner. You take the most unimaginable hell that a parent could be told and double that. So it's unbelievable. And the brothers did not have any other siblings. So just a couple minutes later, both of this guy's sons are both dead. Rory McDowell lost control of his pickup.
Coming, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Does that suck?
Absolutely. He lost control of his pickup coming out of a curve, and the vehicle struck a tree shortly before 1:30 a.m. About 15 minutes later, Corey McDowell's 1984 Porsche, whatever you want to say, tomato, tomato, veered off another rural road. There you go. Went into a spin and struck a tree and burst into flames. Wow, what a weird kind of thing. This is one of my first things for the holiday season. I thought I'd... There you go. Something like Mick Foley there. I'd say intersperse the news with a little letter to Santa here. I got these off the letter to Santa from Tony, T-O-N-I, a girl in Indianapolis, Indiana, 8 years old. She says, my dad is on disability. My mommy can't work because of my sister. I mean, mommy says we do not expect much for Christmas. But my sister needs a new bed and clothes and a new bike. My mommy says we have each other and this is what is important. Oh, that's kind of nice. There you go. This next one is from Springfield, Illinois. A legislator wants to name the 1985 Chicago Bears as the greatest football team ever. Forget the no-name defense, the Steel Curtain, America's team. Illinois could soon crown the Bears as football's king. So 20 years ago, because 20 years ago the season is was 85-2005, a key lawmaker is pushing to have the legislature declare that club the greatest football team of all time. Wow, that's some... Jesus.
Wow!
They just named the Cubs the greatest baseball team of all time.
Wow.
And they just have a big riot. This next one
wow.
is... There you go. Next one is a letter to Santa from Matt, 9 years old, from Westbury, New York. Just so you know, I put a trap on your cookies, so Daddy will not eat them again this year. There you go. So Daddy's got to stay away from the cookies for Santa there. Madison, Wisconsin. This one is from last Thursday. Madison boy, 13, charged with gunpoint rape of 19-year-old woman. A 13-year-old Madison boy has been charged with a gunpoint rape and robbing of a 19-year-old woman on a bike path. Man, was he riding a tricycle? The boy was charged Thursday for the assault that occurred Wednesday morning. The boy is also suspected in a gunpoint sexual assault of a 54-year-old woman.
You are one pathetic loser.
Absolutely. I mean, 13 years old. I wasn't even thinking about sex at 13. Police arrested the boy shortly after Wednesday's assault. Close to blah, 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 blah. He's been charged with the juvenile equivalent of 7 counts of first-degree sexual assault, along with kidnapping, false imprisonment, intimidation of a victim, and making threats. I don't know how these... this must be a big boy.
You are stuck on stupid.
Yeah, 13-year-old boy intimidating a 54-year-old woman and a 19-year-old woman. I don't know. Well, I guess he had a gun, so maybe that makes sense, but still... this is from Friday. Scientists saying a fissure could become a new ocean. This is from the Associated Press. Ethiopian, American, and European researchers have observed a fissure in a desert in the remote northeast that could become the birth of a new ocean. Researchers from Britain, France, and Italy in the U.S. have been observing the 37-mile-long fissure since it split open in September in the Afar Desert. It's estimated it could take 1 million years to fully form into an ocean. The fissure, now 13 feet wide, formed in just 3 weeks after a September 14th earthquake. So, yeah, kind of cool. You know, ocean forming over there in the middle of Africa. The next one's from Friday. Teacher accused of having sexual encounters with student. From York, Pennsylvania. A York high school teacher has been charged with the corruption of minors for allegedly having a sexual relationship with a student at the school.
You are one pathetic loser.
I don't know about that. Give me a chance to get a 29-year-old teacher when I was 17. I would have taken that chance every minute of the day. Police say Robin Winkus, 29, had 5 separate sexual encounters with a 17-year-old student between October and November of this year. Wow. She used emails and text messages to keep in contact with the student. Winkus is an English teacher. I bet she taught him all about biology, though, right? Where were these teachers on ground? Keep saying, where were they? You know, I got all these fat asses around in school. I got the nuns cracking my knuckles, you know. And where we are here? European Union border regions to join in bid to prevent new Iron Curtain. This is from Friday. EUobserver.com from Brussels. 40 regions on the EU's eastern border are kicking off a network aimed at avoiding a new Iron Curtain emerging after the enlargement of the bloc's Schengen borderless zone to new member states. So they're trying to get these Baltic states, the former Warsaw Pact, to band together so another new Iron Curtain doesn't form. So I guess that does make sense. Include them rather than exclude them. The next one is from Friday. A dog survives 13 days in stolen car. Police locate car and dog. It's from Denver, Colorado. A Denver man will be reunited with his dog. He already was because this is on Friday. Friday after the canine spent 13 days without food or water in the man's stolen car. David Dodge, 85, reported his car was stolen the day after Thanksgiving while it was parked in the front of a dry cleaner's. His dog, Princess, was... There she is. Oh, wow. That sounds like a poodle. Was inside the car when it was stolen. He's a yapper there, huh? Was stolen. Dodge spent the next 2 weeks calling animal shelters throughout the state, but no one had seen his beloved dog. So they found the car, and the dog was still inside. The Princess had no food or water during the ordeal and survived sub-zero temperatures. Good for Princess. The next one is also from Friday. Torture death. Two Butler County people are charged today with torturing their roommate for weeks by beating and by beating and burning him before killing him. Yeah, they just don't want to. We don't just shoot him. No, we'll burn him, we'll beat him, then we'll shoot him. Police say Timothy James Caldwell and Melissa Ann Adams, both of Butler, Pennsylvania, believe Jason Michael Richard stole money from them. Richard's body, burned beyond recognition, was found November 11th in a trash bin in Butler. The police say that the two confessed. They are charged with homicide, blah, blah, blah. They went on there. The body went unidentified until Thursday when they both when Doug and Bonnie Richards contacted authorities, fearing it was their sons. So, the police said Caldwell beat Richard, and then when the thefts didn't stop, he and Adams burned him repeatedly. Wow, that's nice. 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 I'm going to cook him for Thanksgiving, I guess. They didn't stuff him, though. This is from Saturday from CNN International. Self-defense claim in nun slaying. A man accused of killing the American nun and rainforest defender Dorothy Stang told a jury Friday that he acted in self-defense after mistaking her Bible for a gun. How the hell can you... Pardon the pun, but...
Brilliant!
Yeah, how the hell can you mistaken a Bible for a gun?
Laughable, man!
This guy... this guy... He's accused, I can't even pronounce his name, it's Rafrain Das Neves Sales, I guess his name is accused of killing Stank, 73 years old, with
What the shit is that?
Yeah, with six shots from a .38 caliber revolver, there you go, on February 12th on a muddy road deep in the heart of the Amazon rainforest. All this bio about her. Sales testified he and Stang had an argument over who owned the land he was working, and that Stang threatened to finish him off with the help of some 150 people living on a sustainable development reserve that she was trying to establish. According to this guy, she said, "The weapon I have is this," and she reached into her bag, and he, of course, with the Bible she was pulling out, but he blew her away, thinking it was a gun she was going to pull out of her purse. So, brilliant, brilliant. Now, prosecutors alleged that a rancher actually paid this guy to kill the nun. So, interesting. I was wondering what happened to her. We read that months ago, back, early in the part of the year, that this nun was killed over there. So, finally, see some resolution to this. Now, let me see. This is from Saturday. Kellogg promises healthier Pop-Tart cereal make... Kellogg promises healthier Pop-Tarts. Cereal maker says it will use new soybean oil in some products, calls on others to make the switch. So Kellogg's is going to make the, if it's possible, make the Pop-Tarts more healthier for people.
I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Yeah, what they're going to put in is something that's going to make it taste off or a bad aftertaste, you know what I mean? This is from Saturday. U.S. foreign money addiction means trouble. Every day, the United States sucks in more and more money from abroad just to keep the nation going. We speak, of course, about foreign money. At our current rate of trade and budget deficits, foreigners need to purchase $2 billion in dollar-denominated assets each day just to keep the dollar stable. Over half the national debt is now financed by foreigners. That's been true since 1980. Oh, we know all about that. Thanks, Ronald Reagan. The difference is the scale of the game. If this money stopped coming in, the dollar would take a dive, and U.S. bond yields would have to come up. So they're fearing the worst. Right now, let's see, foreign investments in U.S. bonds and equities set a record in September. Foreigners bought $1.01 trillion in U.S. securities in the 12 months ending in September, up from $866 billion for the same period in 2004. According to the United States Treasury Department. So, apparently, the only reason why they keep buying up our bonds is because the yields are over higher. Our yields are 4.5%, while the Euro bonds are closer to 3.2%, and the Japanese bonds are 1.5%. So, as long as those percentages stay up, they'll keep buying our bonds to finance our debt. So, we'll see what happens there. And this next letter to Santa is from Kyle, 6 years old, from Falkton, South Dakota. He writes, oh, by the way, my cancer is all gone this year and my hair has grown back. You might not recognize me, so I'll leave you a new picture. Oh, that's pretty cool. And this next news to you is from Saturday. Russia's English language channel begins. Russia's new government-funded English language satellite TV channel began broadcast on Saturday as Moscow seeks to polish its image abroad. They staff a 344 journalists and a $30 million budget. Russia Today is the name of the channel. We're broadcast 24 hours a day in North America, Europe, and Asia. I wonder how many reality programs they're going to have. Survivor does the Ukraine or something, or Siberia. The program is also available for Russians through subscriptions to a premium satellite package. So, I guess that's pretty good. Can I keep these journalists in business? I wonder if they want an internet radio show on their channel, what do you think? No? I don't know. Why not? Women accused of assaulting children at local school. This is from Sunday. From Bakersfield, California. There we go. We made our way west now. A Bakersfield mother is facing assault charges after she burst into her child's classroom and hit several children on Friday. The unidentified woman was arrested at Wayside Elementary School on Thursday. Authorities say she was upset about her child's behavior and pushed aside some students in trying to get to her son. Yeah, just don't say excuse me or get out of the way. Just shove him the hell out of the way. She was taken to Kern County Jail and faces a felony count of assault with a deadly weapon. What the hell was she selling? Probably her purse, huh? Amazing. I'm telling you, we're getting close to the thing where it's going to be right. Everybody's going to have to subject themselves to like...
That's got to hurt.
Yeah, a biannual, a triannual mental health exam in this country because everybody's off the rockers, you know? Next one is from Sunday from Kuala Lumpur. Asian moves toward charter and human rights agenda. I think it's Asian, whatever it is. Ocean, well, whatever. Southeast Asia's regional grouping agreed on Monday to draft its first constitution, a document that could enshrine human rights and democracy in a region where both have come under critical scrutiny. Leaders of the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, including military-ruled Myanmar and communist Vietnam, agreed an eminent persons group, including former regional leaders, should decide the final shape of the charter. So that's good, because that part of the real world, all you hear about is the human rights abuses and all this stuff. So if they're getting their act together, I think waves of some kind of a tweak on democracy is making its way around the world, which is nice. This next one is also from Sunday about tea reduces ovarian cancer risk. The risk of developing ovarian cancer can be reduced by drinking tea. A team of Swedish researchers say, this is from the British Broadcasting Company, Karolinska Institute researchers found drinking at least 2 cups a day of tea cut the risk by nearly 50% of getting cancer. Antioxidants in the tea are thought to be the reason. The team quizzed over 60,000 women, 301 of whom developed ovarian cancer. The Archives of Internal Medicine Studies said more research was needed, and UK experts added there was still no proof of the benefits. The previous research has shown that tea helps protect against several types of cancer and boosts memory. Interesting. I'm going to start swigging some tea. How about some green tea, you know what I mean? Now, where happened to green tea? You know, we stopped hearing about green tea now. For a while, all we hear is green tea. Green tea is good for you. It cleans your teeth. It cleans out your pores and everything else. Now, nothing about green tea. Now, it's, what the hell is it now? It's Fitness Made Simple with John Baystyle is all we hear about. Refusal to question U.S. over torture flights may be illegal. Straw finally admits CIA planes landed in Britain. Calls grow for inquiry into use of UK in renditions. Of course, they're not torture centers, they're rendition centers, which is not really torture. The government may be breaking the law by refusing, the British government, refusing to question the U.S. about torture flights. Senior MP said yesterday, as it admitted, for the first time that CIA aircraft had landed at British airports. Jack Straw, the foreign secretary, said yesterday careful research by officials had failed to identify any request from the Bush administration for the passage through Britain. But he said no relevant records exist of such flights because the government does not need to keep them. So they don't have records of these flights, rendition flights going on. They also refuse to say how many times a Boeing 737, a Gulfstream identified by The Guardian as being used by the CIA, had landed in Britain. So, who knows? And I got the registry number, so anybody sees these planes landing, let us know. This is, the flight is registered as N313P. See that on the tail, or whatever the hell that thing is. And then the other plane is N379P. So, see either one of them, let the New York Times know or CNN know they see these planes landing in your airport. I think I saw one landing at the McCarran here in Vegas a little while ago. I don't know. And in India, and on top in global hiring race. This is from the Economic Times on Tuesday. So we're all worried about China, but now we're ignoring India. So I think India might be the big elephant in the room that we're ignoring. This is from New Delhi, that the hiring pace in India continues to outshine the world, according to Manpower Employment Outlook Survey. Most corporations have expressed a desire to blah, 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 blah. So India topped the chart despite a 13% decline in net employment outlook. This is from the fourth quarter of 2005. So India is the country I keep your eye on. China, yes, as well. But India, got to keep your eye on them. Of the 4,280 employers surveyed in India, 30% felt that there would be an increase in their hiring activity, while 3% there would be a decrease. So India is one to keep your eye on. Keep an eye on them. And this is also from the Associated Press from today, about an hour and 16 minutes ago. Investigator, U.S. shipped out detainees. A European investigator said Tuesday that he had found mounting indications the United States illegally held detainees in Europe, but then hurriedly shipped them out the last ones to North Africa a month ago when word leaked out.
Spare me your sixth grade Michael Moore logic.
There you go. So we don't, what race say, we don't hold prisoners for renditioning or whatever it is. Well, we did, but she never said we did, so we don't now. So it's, you know, in the present tense. Yeah, so just a Swiss senator looking into claims that the CIA operated secret prisons in Europe said ongoing month-long investigation unearthed clues that Poland and Romania were implicated, perhaps unwittingly. So they had them in North. Now they moved these people to North Africa when all this BS started to leak out. So anyway, what else? And then we have this last two items, and we'll get to Justin from the Dunkelman. We had the next stop for if you want a tour. Next stop is New Orleans. Disaster trip for tourists. Visitors to New Orleans who once toured the graceful mansions of its Garden District can now take a tour of the disaster area. Gray Line Tours of New Orleans begin on January 4th, a Hurricane Katrina tour. Yes, for only $35, you too can take a three-hour tour of the Hurricane Katrina tour of the devastation in New Orleans.
What in the name of corn on the cob is going on around here?
Yes, that's what you call capitalism at work. And I found this interesting, that the oldest Maya mural uncovered in Guatemala. Archaeologists said on Tuesday he was awestruck when he uncovered a Maya mural not seen for nearly two millennia, discovered at the San Bartolo site in Guatemala.
Wow.
Yes, I think it's a dog from Taco Bell commercial. The mural covers the west wall of a room attached to a pyramid. So, well, I thought that was kind of cool. And then the last letter to Santa is from Laura, or letter to Santa, Laura 9 from James Creek, Pennsylvania. I really want a parent for my best friend, Jade. Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that's touching. So anyway, I think we're joined by Justin from the Dunkelvent. Justin?
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you, man?
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
I said you'd be doing your report in your birthday suit. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, I'm completely naked right now.
And, that's lovely.
I think this is the first naked podcast, even though you can't tell technically, but just trust me.
Yeah.
And it's quite a sight.
I hope you hear moaning or...
I'm leaving that. I've blocked out this 30 minutes for, you know, it's kind of a reprise.
A little lubing action. It works wonderful.
Sure.
So anyway, welcome to the program. Happy birthday. You turned a big 2-9 today. Is that correct?
Big 2-9, yeah.
Wow.
I have the whole next year to contemplate turning 30.
So
it's a good time. And
well, the 30s are a wonderful time.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they are. You know, what? 30 is not the same as it was like 20 years ago, right? You know, I mean, like 30 is like you're still kind of, you know, in your 20s. The 20s last until like 35 now,
yeah.
I think.
Well,
you know?
They said that the because of the baby boomers, they said they say don't trust anybody over 30. Now they're saying don't trust anyone over 60 now, the baby boomers are saying. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Those baby boomers, you know, they like their pot. So.
Yeah, they're going to be at the end of this country, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're the ones that don't save. Actually, nobody saves any money. I read we're the lowest saving. Right now, the country's at the lowest saving percentage of any time in its history.
Here's the thing. Stupid people don't save. You know, they continue to, like, you know, rack up stuff. You know, when you have a government like ours that essentially is a credit card economy, you know, when they're not very fiscally responsible at all. I mean, I think it's kind of understandable, you know, but it's a very idiotic way to, like, you know, conduct your finances, because you will find yourself in a pretty big hole.
True. Oh, yep. I mean, I was reading Darth Merlin in the chat room. I was like, I might be going away for a while because so outing Valerie Plame is a crime, but giving out the CIA plane registry numbers is not. So yeah, I just gave out the CIA plane registry numbers. I might be going away for a while.
Uh-oh.
Well, hey, I can pick it off a website, so it's out there for the, on the public domain. When it's there,
sure,
it's,
sure, yeah,
it's free.
If it's in the public domain, I mean, you're it's not, you're not going to go to jail.
Absolute.
The person who put it on the public domain is going to go to jail.
I'll get the
know?
Dream team behind me. I'll get you know, the law firm of Diggs, Cruz, and Khan here to defend me, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
My cousin Vinny. Absolutely. Anyway, yeah. So you want to talk about the now the Iraqi election. You're from the Dunkelvin blog. We got to keep mentioning that, and also from the Moderate Voice blog. And
right, absolutely. Yeah, I've just started posting over the Moderate Voice, and it's going really, really well. Joe Gandelman is awesome.
He's wonderful. And yeah. Now you want to talk about the Iraqi election, how now we have the troops actually voting now, and a lot of the expatriates here in the United States and other countries are starting to vote, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The first voting was in Australia. And kind of ironic given the recent riots they had there. Well, not riots, but riot that they had there in Australia. I believe it was in Sydney. And
Those are Lebanese, apparently, students or something like that. They're trying to crowd off the native Australians or whatever it is from some beach, and that triggered all kinds of riots. Is that right?
Well, I heard it actually wasn't so much the Lebanese as it was just, you know, they said, like, Lebanese go home or something like that. But, I mean, it wasn't necessarily, like, all Lebanese. But that's just an editorial that I read today. So I'm not sure that's totally accurate.
Now, this... I went back to this election in Iraq. Now, is there any doubt what's going to, you know, that this, you know, the government's going to give, you know, a government that, you know, that's you know, we want is not going to get elected? I mean, I think, you know, this is all a bunch of hooey. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the government that we want elected the last time, you know, that we, when, you know, the last elections were around, didn't necessarily get put into place. So, I mean, the people that we were backing didn't necessarily get elected. So I think we just really have to see how this shakes out.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have 275 members of parliament being elected in this next election. It's very important. You know, I mean, we're essentially going to see how the power structure is going to be formed in Iraq.
Yeah.
And it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting.
Well, it's a good step. Yeah, you know, it's another step on the road to democracy. I hope you know, the Iraqi people will see this as an empowerment, and then hopefully it'll start calming down over there.
No, I know. I agree. But see, I think again, like, I think it needs to be pointed out that it's not necessarily the Iraqi people who need to calm down. I think it's more of the I think it goes back to a strategy, and it goes back to strategy of making sure that those borders are secure, making sure that you go into these towns and then you hold them. You don't let the you know, the insurgents, I actually call them terrorists, you know, gain a foothold again after you take the town back over. They come back in after you leave, you know, and you know, and just having a real plan to win the peace in that country.
Absolutely.
That's
going
to be more important than democracy. Then I really think that these elections will, because if you have, you know, all of these, if you have unstable provinces, then you have places where democracy can't flourish, and so democracy is going to flourish in other places in the country, and it's going to be disproportionate because people can't go out and vote in those provinces where there's a lot of unrest.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really important that we make sure that we establish order and peace in that country. And we owe it to the Iraqi people since we went in there.
Absolutely.
You know, and,
yeah. That's a, you know, Powell said, you know, that you did the old Pottery Barn thing. Yeah, you know, that's still relevant. You know, we went in, we broke it, now we bought it, you know.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, I
agree. I still think, you know, the idea I had, I saw somebody else talking about that idea, too, about giving the Iraqis a share of the oil profits. That's starting to take hold. Somebody picked it up and is running with it now. And also pulling back our troops to the border and let the Iraqi troops take care of the interior of the country. That makes sense, too. Yeah,
I think there's some definite benefits to sharing the oil revenue.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, for too long it has been in the hands of the powerful, and they've built castles and all this other nonsense, and they've really abused the system. And I think it would be a grand gesture to give it back to the Iraqi people. I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen. After we talked last week, in fact, I did a little bit more research, and it seems like the Kurds are already, like, making deals with certain, you know, oil companies they're making private deals, right? Because it's just the way that it's structured right now, just it's not giving it back to all the people, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea, but I don't know that that's necessarily going to come to any sort of fruition. But
well, that's where the American diplomacy comes in, and we got to sit down with these people and you know, make them realize, you know, making your own separate deals is ridiculous because you're harming the rest of the country. You know,
we can you know what, we can do that all we want.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we're still the occupying force.
We're the guests
in
our house.
And we can try to enforce our will over the people, but it's a tough proposition, man. Because I mean, you have this, you essentially have this situation where you have come in, you've killed over 20,000 Iraqis, is what Bush said. The number is probably a little bit higher than that, but that's what he said recently.
Yeah, he just said it yesterday. He's 30,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it 30,000?
30,000. Well,
30,000.
It's the first time ever that the administration has even admitted to any kind of putting any number on the amount of Iraqis killed in the war.
Right. And we're not just talking about Iraqi soldiers, right?
Who were
fighting against us. I mean, we're talking about soldiers and people and women and children and that's a pretty sobering number.
Yeah.
And if you think that after that many people have lost their family members, their husbands, their wives, their children, if they think that they're going to be more inclined to listen to an occupying force, it's not that they don't want democracy in their country. It's not that they don't want the U.S. in there. It's just at some point they say, we know what's best for Iraq because we are Iraqis. And there are really no easy solutions.
No,
and I think that their opinions and their wishes need to be expressed, or need to be what do I want to say?
Respected.
They need to be respected. Yes, ultimately.
There you go. Yeah.
Right. And again, there are no easy answers in this situation.
Quagmire.
But,
Yeah, actually, I have a comment from
there you situation. Go. You say quagmire.
In the chat room, Darth Marley is saying that the Israeli intel says 6 months to Iranian nuke. So supposedly Israel is going to go in there and blast the hell out of Iran. What do you think about that? I don't think they're going to do that. They know they'll start a whole war over there if they do that, huh?
I don't know. I mean, Israel is not a stranger to escalation. We've seen that in their own country, in the Gaza Strip, and in Palestine. It's kept on going year after year after year after year.
Yeah.
And the people that the Israeli leaders, like Sharon, haven't necessarily helped that. There was a quiet time for a time until Sharon got voted in, and then you had him walking through that holy place just because he said that he could, could, and then that pisses people off, and they find it disrespectful, and then they start killing people.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's right. I'm not saying that that's a an appropriate response to that, but I think that what needs to happen essentially is you need to have a different, point of view on this. And somebody like Sharon, who has been through these wars, who has a glass eye because he had, he has battle injuries.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's not the best person to have a perspective on the, Israeli-Palestinian, Muslim conflict.
Yeah, he's a bitter old man, basically. Yeah.
Well, I mean, quite possibly, yes.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
he might say something, in public, he might say something different than that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you have to consider this guy is part of the old guard.
Yeah.
This guy was there, when all the stuff was going down.
Mm.
And he's seen some of the worst.
Mm.
And, it might take 20 years for people like Sharon to drift off, into the sunset, and for some new ideas to come in.
Well, let's hope. I mean, we need new leadership, not only over there, but also over here, I think, too, with a little more of a sort of introvert, a little extroverted view of things. Also, you want to talk about the Iraq fallen soldiers being shipped back in cargo planes. I saw that on... I think it was live from on CNN with the Kira Phillips. They had a mother or a husband and wife, and their son was killed in action over Iraq. And they fought to have the son brought back. They brought him back, I guess, in the belly of a Delta Airlines or something like that. And you know, is that? Did you see that too, or?
I did not see the report.
Ah.
I saw the story.
No.
And when I saw the story, it was upsetting,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you have I don't know if this was necessarily the mother or the father, but there was this service man named Matthew Holly. And
yes, that was him.
That was him. Well, they fought for him to not be shipped back in the cargo hold. Actually,
mm-hmm.
I think he was shipped back, and he got full honors, and he was covered in his coffin was covered in a flag.
Mm-hmm.
But that hasn't necessarily been happening to some soldiers that have come into Dover Air Force Base, right,
mm-hmm.
from Iraq, and they're shipped off those types of Air Force carriers, you know. In with full honors, you know, with full honors, and then, but then the last leg of their journey, they're shipped back to wherever they have come from,
mm-hmm.
And they're shipped in the cargo belly of commercial airplane.
Yeah, with luggage.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
then, you know,
and not only that is. The coffin is the last thing to come off the plane because we don't want people to be offended when they see the luggage and, you know, the coffin come up. People are always looking at the plane, so the coffin comes off last. You know, they make them wait till all the luggage is up, then they bring the coffin off. You know what I mean?
I didn't read that in the story, but,
yeah.
I mean, you know, that obviously that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's just something that, you know, if these people are going to die for our country, if they're going to fight for our
mm-hmm.
country and then die for our country.
Absolutely.
I believe that we owe them the expense, regardless of how much it costs,
mm-hmm.
of making sure that their last leg of the journey home is one that they have, you know, that's an honorable one.
Exactly.
You know, we're not necessarily showing, you know, their exit from the planes at Dover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, people have gotten fired for taking pictures of the insides of the planes before, and you know, our administration won't allow the media in to photograph those
mm-hmm.
or take any video of the coffins coming off.
Oh, I can imagine that if that we did have footage of these coffins coming off, and Bush's approval rating be like at a -40 or something like that by now, because that's the image, you know, and those few times that it did let pictures be taken, I think Time or Newsweek put them on the front page of the paper, and it's powerful seeing all those coffins and those cargo and those military cargo planes, I guess, with the flags draped over them. It's like, oh man, it really brings it home, you know.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons. There's been a fair amount of criticism of the media, reporting the bad things that are happening
mm-hmm.
in Iraq. But what is really affecting us here at home? I mean,
mm-hmm.
what is the media's interest also as well
yeah.
of reporting things that are happening in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Right? These people come from, you know, all these different communities, and you know, at the end of the day. When somebody like Matthew Holly dies, you know, he leaves a legacy behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, he leaves, you know, friends and family, and these are the types of stories that I think should be told.
Yeah.
Because those are real people leading real lives who have fought and died for our country, and they deserve the respect and honor that, you know, that comes with that. And part of that respect and honor is acknowledging that they went and died for us.
Yeah.
Actually, right?
Darth Marley's asking you, is it okay to ship military dead via commercial jets if we are not at war?
I don't think so. I mean, I think if you're part of the military
yes.
and you die in any sort of like you know, military, well, I mean, if you're part of the military, I think you deserve full honors.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that there's a distinction.
No, I don't think so either. I totally agree that I don't think our military dead should be shipped out in Continental Airlines or Southwest or something like that. I mean,
it's a good question, but
yeah.
I think that, you know, if you're part of the military
mm-hmm.
and regardless of whether, you know, you have died from a heart attack,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you were at a desk or whatever, I mean, you deserve full military honors.
Exactly.
And here's the thing, usually when let's say like, you know, you're at a desk job and
mm-hmm.
you're part of the military, you're probably going to be living in the town that you, you know, You're probably going to be working in the town that you live in.
That's true.
Right? I mean, you're probably not going to be shipped over from Iraq.
No.
And then shipped, you know, back to San Diego, right? Which is, I think, was the case in Matthew Hawley's case. So you're not going to probably run into the same type of situation that Matthew Hawley did and Matthew Hawley's family did. But yeah, of course, you're entitled to those honors.
Yeah, and then, well, I also want to talk about the Iran. Its president questions the Holocaust. He's questioning that the Holocaust never happened. Is that right?
I don't know that he's. No, I don't think he's questioning. He's not questioning necessarily whether or not the Holocaust happened. I think that's kind of a subtle point. I think he's questioning about how many, you know, Jews actually died in the Holocaust, and it's just like. Are we really talking about this again?
Yeah, is this guy clueless?
No.
Is he clueless or what? He's the one that also said Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth. Is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's really telling. And I think you have somebody that you have this leader, you know, this extraordinarily hardliner, and you have to really wonder, you know, where this guy is going to take Iran.
Oh,
and
I
have to really wonder. You know, I mean, you know, he obviously wants nuclear capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty recently, I think in the past couple of days, Iran has asked that U.S. companies, American companies, bid on building these nuclear facilities. And I think that that's an interesting idea. I think that, you know, we could definitely have more of a view into than building nuclear capabilities, but then Israel said we're just going to wipe all the nuclear capabilities out.
Yeah. So do the American companies want to go through the expense of, you know, helping build these plants, just have Israel come along and blow them up? You know?
They wouldn't even have a chance, right? I mean, Israel would blow up like anything that Iran has come up with so far.
It would just be
wiped out. I'm sure Israel has very, very good intelligence about all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Darth
Marley.
Iran is the next country to fall under the scrutiny of, you know, the United States and Israel, and it's going to be the one to watch. It's because it is the next target on the war on terror.
Yeah. It's a shame that it's got to be, I don't know, somebody in that region. I don't think it's the Saudis, but somebody's got to be able to, you know, get to the leadership, not necessarily the president of Iran, because it sounds like he's a loon. But, I mean, there's got to be an Ayatollah there. I mean, make them reason that, you know, like Gaddafi, you know, he even realized that he was out of step with the rest of the world. And, you know, he's now, you know, making overtures and stuff to get involved, you know, with the world community. I think Iran, you know, somebody would say, hey, we got to see the light here, you know.
I don't think that they care.
No.
I think that the people underneath the president cares, right? Not you know, the Iranian president, not our president, but because they know what's going to come with that.
Yeah.
Right? They know that he is inviting disaster. He's inviting invasion with his talk, especially because Iran is just right in that zone, you know, that we want to spread democracy zone, right? The United States has pointed out that the Middle East needs to take on democracy as a, you know, as more of a mantle. And, you know, I mean, there's elections in Iran, but that's not real. They're not really elections.
No,
right?
No, not at all.
So, I don't know. You have this situation where somebody like the Iranian president just does not get it.
True.
And I think that he is showing a great bit of arrogance. And I don't know what's going to... I honestly don't know what's going to come of it.
I don't know. And Darth Marley saying that the president of Iran said that Austria should give up land and the Israelis should move there.
Yeah, so, I heard that too. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, they should move back. It's like, okay, well, you know, that's okay. Yeah, that's not a starter.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Yeah, they're not going to leave that land over there. And then also, you want to talk about Tukey Williams was put to death last night. I felt Schwarzenegger made the right decision by, you know, because he killed.
You know, here's the thing. I don't believe in death penalty. I think that, you know, he should have gotten life regardless. I mean, that's just my philosophy. I don't think the death penalty really does much to deter anybody.
Yeah.
I don't think at the point that Tukey Williams is right now, or was you know, a week ago, that he was a threat to society. And if we're talking about the death penalty as a deterrent and not as a as a weapon of retribution, mm-hmm. which is essentially what it seems like it was in, you know, in many death penalty cases, when it draws out for years upon years upon years upon years, are these people, and especially if they demonstrate that they're thoughtful, that they, it seems like that they have reformed, right?
Yeah.
Are these people really threats to society at this point? Right? I mean, we're essentially saying, okay, we're going to kill them because it's a deterrent to other potential criminals, mm-hmm. Because they're a threat to society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, I just thought, because Schwarzenegger was following the law as it exists on the books right now in California. That's how my thing was. It's you know, he's on death row. I mean, he's exhausted all his appeals. You know, unless they change the law in California, Schwarzenegger pretty much had to file the letter of the law.
Yeah. Well, I've also read, and I agree, right? Yeah. I mean, he has to follow the letter of the law. He can't just change the law.
No.
But I also read that Arnold didn't think he had reformed. And, you know, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, he co-founded the Crips and all that stuff, and then that Nobel Prize nominee. BS, you know, I could be nominated for a Nobel Prize tomorrow if I go to the university and get a professor to sign a letter off for me. Yeah, that's kind of a that was all BS too about the Nobel Prize business. That's anybody can get that. You know what I mean?
I guess.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that's all you need is get a professor or somebody like that to sign a letter to the Nobel nominee, and you'll be nominated. Doesn't mean you'll win. You're just nominated for a Nobel Prize. You could be nominated. You get some teacher, Joel Gandelman, send you a letter to Nobel. You could be nominated for a Nobel Prize. You know?
Okay. Well, will you elect me?
you got an award coming your way. I should be nominated for a Nobel Prize. And then, in those books he wrote, you know, I checked. I was on blacknews.com, and I went checking. That first book he wrote only sold 300-something copies. The second book sold like 20 copies. So he's not some big best-selling author here. You know, nobody bought those damn books. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if the Reverend Jackson and them are really, into this guy instead of just following the spotlight like a fly like a moth to a fly, all these groups would be buying up his books, you know? You know, 300 books. You know, hell, I could write a book and sell more than that. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, see, the thing about it is like you have somebody who has demonstrated that he is he's well spoken at this point. He's very thoughtful, and people think that that means that this person has reformed.
Mm.
And I don't necessarily disagree.
Yeah.
Right. But again, it doesn't mean that you then change the law for that person. It doesn't mean that person didn't kill four people,
yeah.
Right? And it doesn't mean that person was guilty. I think I remember listening to NPR this morning, and his witnesses, Tukey's mm-hmm. witnesses, walked out after he died, after he was put to death, and said that California had just killed an innocent man.
Yeah, well,
I think that's a very interesting, you know, wording on their part. Because what do they consider innocent? I think that there were some questions around the killing that he was essentially convicted for.
Mm.
You know, and hey, fair enough, whatever. You know, I haven't really dug into that case very much, so I can't really talk very much about that.
Mm.
But it seems like, you know, a jury convicted him. He's been through appeal after appeal after appeal after appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, you have to wonder, okay, well, you know, I mean, what is law and what is not? Personally, I think, here's the thing. I think if one innocent person dies because of the death penalty,
mm-hmm.
okay, it's a broken system, right? I mean, like, if one person is put to death, it's a broken system because it's failed.
Yeah.
And I know that seems very idealistic, but can you imagine being being innocent of a crime and just being railroaded through the system, trying to appeal, you know, because these people, you know, people do appeal, right? Appealing after appeal, you know, appeal after appeal after appeal gets shot down just because of, you know, whatever legal reason. and then you're essentially put to death, and then later on it's found out that you're innocent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what that's the problem that I have with the death penalty.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean that Tukey should, you know, be granted clemency? Does that mean that, you know, his sentence should be commuted? No.
Yeah.
But I do think that his case has certainly opened up the conversation about the death penalty.
Yeah.
And it's I think it's a vital one to have. So.
Well, yeah. Justin, we're going to let you go. We're at the end of our first hour here.
Yeah.
All right. Hello?
Good talk, man.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, you there?
Thank you, Justin. You have a happy birthday, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, man.
All right,
have a good one.
Thank you very much. And bye. Thank you. That was Justin from the Donkelvin blog. I probably shouldn't have started at Tukey Williams, or whatever the hell it was, discussion that late into the segment there, but he wanted to get to it, and it's on everybody's mind, too. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes with the second hour with Philip Nguyen from the blogcritics.org with our pop culture report, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Thank you very much.
see that the humans remain entertained until the end.
And we are back on the for the second hour of Subject to Discussion. I'm a lot of it today. My work is a little banquet tables are a little heavy, and so I'm a little worn out from that. And this is Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com. We just got done with our first hour with Justin from the Dunkelfin blog. A nice discussion about everything political, Iraq, Tookie Williams, and everything else. And now we'll be joined by Philip Nguyen from blogcritics.org. Philip, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Hi, I'm a little out of it today, so I apologize if I changed your name of your site to blogcrickets.com. I apologize.
Blogcrickets.org. See, it's we of course welcome anybody who can manage to figure it out from how you've described it.
Blogcritics.org. And now, Philip, you're the co-owner of the website, right?
I am actually. Yeah, I've been there since the beginning, and
wow.
At some point managed to pick up all the work that goes into making the site hum smoothly.
Congratulations. It is a marvelous site. I mean, I must tell you guys everything there, and I tell you, if I can model, you know, first of all, I do not know how to put a website together for my program, but if I could, I'd model after Blog Crit. So you guys do a hell of a job on that site.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. And now, where are you calling from?
I'm actually calling from Dallas.
Dallas, Texas. There you go. How's JR doing down there, huh?
No? Well, they've got the biggest state out there. They give they give tours through it for a couple bucks now.
There you go. Well, I my grandmother was down there years ago. She says that the ranch is a lot smaller in real life than it looked like on television.
Oh yeah, yeah. Very much so.
Now,
well, it's amazing how many sets they managed to pack into that very simple exterior.
Yeah. And the first item you want to talk about was the Chronicles of Narnia, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Now, that's doing real well in the box office, huh? $65 million on its opening weekend, $107 million worldwide.
That's
wow.
Right.
Yeah.
It's got legs, too, I think. I was there opening night. I missed out on the pre-screenings,
mm-hmm.
but I actually took my kids to the movie. I've got a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and I prepared them ahead of time that there might be some scary scenes, and
mm-hmm.
my kids just really, they're not too bothered by those types of things. We've watched Pirates of the Caribbean, and that's PG-13, so I figured they could probably handle a PG-rated lion.
Now, did they like this movie? A lot of people say, I've talked to at work, I work at Caesars here in Las Vegas, and they said it reminds them of Lord of the Rings.
It does. It probably owes more to Lord of the Rings than any other recent films, just in terms of making fantasy viable as a video element again.
Mm-hmm.
The structure of the movie even was slightly tweaked from the book on which it's based to feature kind of an extended battle scene at the end, very reminiscent of the Lord of the Rings movies. And so, I would say that Adamson owes Peter Jackson a lot of money for making the world safe for Narnia.
Now, now your kids all felt comfortable seeing the movie, and nothing really made them cringe or anything?
No, there's nothing like that. They had a big battle scene that managed to be completely bloodless, which sounds like it would be disappointing to someone, you know, used to... I enjoy zombie movies myself, so I'm used to severed heads and spurting blood, but... It turns out they managed to make the battle scene exciting, despite the lack of blood, and so it held my kids interested and didn't disappoint me either.
Yeah, I don't want to interrupt here, but I saw the movie.
Oh, you saw it. Hey. What'd you think? That's Khan. He's the producer.
At times, I thought it was kind of slow.
Really?
I mean, I'm early 30s here. I thought it was kind of slow in some place, and I knew prior to going to it, there were supposed to be some, like, religious overtones. But I kind of blocked that out.
Yeah.
I just kind of watch a movie for what it is, and I don't...
Yeah.
Unless you're real religious, I guess you can make some correlation, but I didn't make any correlation. I watched it. I thought it was fine. And, of course, the special effects are awesome. And you know what? Now you... Since you mentioned it, there was no blood. I didn't even really...
Really?
And I'm into those gory movies, too, so...
Give me Land of the Dead any day, but...
Yeah, I thought it was very well done.
I'm actually surprised. They managed to have people with swords going in and coming out and remaining dry, so...
I think they could have probably could have cut out a little bit to make it a little shorter and maybe fast-paced, because it's kind of
slow-moving.
Yeah.
How long?
I think part of the problem there is adaptation from the book. I mean, remember Lord of the Rings, for example, had similar you know, similar source material and managed to get something like 12 hours out with the extended editions and still annoyed legions of fans for leaving out, you know, Tom Bombadil or this battle or that discussion.
Yeah.
And I think they were trying to avoid that by sticking in almost everything from the book.
Yeah.
In this case, and they did actually throw in. If you've seen the movie, there's a scene at the base of a waterfall, basically as ice is breaking away. It's a confrontation with a wolf.
Oh, I saw that on.
I saw that. Wow.
I saw that on.
See, that isn't in the book.
Oh,
that
really?
That was inserted. Oh. Basically, to kind of speed up that portion of the movie.
Uh oh.
Well, that was good then, because I liked that part.
Yeah, it was actually very well done.
They showed that scene on Conan O'Brien. I think it was on Monday. They had the kid, whatever the hell his name is. He was on Conan's program. The kid's a lot older now than he was in that movie. But they showed that scene. I am going to go see it, but it looks like it's incredible. Huh?
Yeah, that was one of the more well done in terms of special effects and just structure. It was very, very nice.
Now,
you mentioned you know, I guess I call it Christian propaganda. It certainly has been, the book has been widely touted as a favorite Christian novel, and people point to allegorical elements. There's a, you know, there's a certain amount of parallel between Aslan the lion and Christ. I don't want to give too much away.
Well,
but, you know, let's just say that there's a parallel involving, say, Easter-like themes. But I also know that... if you've read the book and haven't come away feeling beaten over the head with Christian propaganda, that's essentially what you'll get out of the movie.
Well, it's
no more or less propagandic than the book.
Here's a note for you that you probably don't know.
Huh.
I didn't realize until the end of the movie when they're showing the credits and they showed the voices or whatever.
Ah.
And they kept saying Aslan, and I was like, okay, or Aslan, whatever they were. And in Turkish...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pronounced Aslan,
which means lion.
So I was like, oh, okay, I don't know if they, I don't know if the guy that wrote the book knew that.
Probably.
And yeah, he was a literary professor,
C.S. Lewis,
of
right?
Tolkien, actually.
Yeah.
And very much into linguistics and that sort of thing. So I feel pretty confident he knew what the word meant when he used it.
Well, now C.S. Lewis was good friends with the author of the Lord of the Rings books, if I read
that
correctly.
Yeah.
So that's why he borrowed, you know, it's like the books kind of mirrored each other, kind of. And then, now they set up, there'll be sequels, right, to this?
Well, I would hope so. There were 7 books in the series. Some better than others, although in consulting with some friends in the last few weeks, I've realized that each of us have different favorites from the series.
Mm-hmm.
So I suspect they're planning on making all 7.
Huh. And then actually Darth Marley in the chat room is saying that Disney hired the same marketing firm that promoted The Passion of the Christ, and that Tolkien thought C.S. Lewis was too on the nose with the book. So even Tolkien was impressed.
He basically, Tolkien and Lewis both claimed to disdain allegory. But Tolkien very specifically criticized this one book and a couple of the other books in the series for being just pure allegory to, you know, hammer on the head about the Christian allegory and the Christ figure.
Really?
And like I said, Lewis claimed not to like allegory, although he later admitted, yeah, there's a certain amount of that in the book. And he later in life wrote an actual, real, word-for-word allegory called The Pilgrim's Regress.
Yeah. And also you want to talk about the movie Brokeback Mountain. Now, that comes out, what, this week? Is that right?
It's been in limited release in a couple of cities, and it should come out this Friday and a lot more.
Yeah.
That's one I haven't seen yet, and it's funny because I see them almost as parallels. There are a lot of people, pretty much the opposite group, the people who are loving the propaganda in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe are worried about the propaganda in Brokeback Mountain, and vice versa.
That's because of the two men falling in love and all that. So that's part of the problem.
Quote unquote gay cowboy movie.
Yeah. And then, I was surprised that all the reviews, even Ebert and whatever the hell his name is, Roper, they gave it all thumbs up. And then it was nominated for a Golden Globe today. I read that.
For 7 Golden Globes.
Wow.
Yeah, including Best Picture, Best Director.
Well, how much money can this movie...
That's an ass load of...
how much money, you know... how much money could this movie make? I mean, I can't imagine it's going to be that big of a blockbuster, pardon the pun. But, I mean, you know, some areas of the country is probably going to see it, like California and probably the East Coast. But the Middle America, I don't think they're going to stay away from this movie, huh?
Yeah, maybe until rental at least. I mean, it's getting enough accolades, and it could be that good reviews push it back my initial estimate. But I think it'll probably top out. The box office, at least, will probably top out around $30 million. It's hard to imagine it doing more than that in theaters.
Well, yeah, that's what a guy on... I was watching, I don't know, CNN or whatever, and a guy on... they were talking to some movie critics, and they said they'll probably do around $35 million.
Well, that's a good... Okay. I mean, how much do they pay Ledger and the other guy, Gyllenhaal, to do the movie? I mean, they're not big $20 million
well, a unknown. Movie. It's unknown. I mean... Neither of them, of course, are Tom Cruise type actors. Able to command, you know, $30 million a pop. And they haven't really said publicly yet what the budget is. So, but it's pretty well, I think, believed that if it does make $30 to $35 million, that it's already going to turn a profit at that.
Now this movie says it's supposed to be kind of open the door for more movies. You know, not just gay men, but also movies involved with lesbians. More, we'll be seeing more of these movies if this one is even a moderate hit. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It comes at an interesting time in which society, you can almost parallel and say, look, we've had the TV shows that are almost like, say, minstrel shows in the sense that they use gay characters as comedic elements, but still can't take them quite too seriously. I mean, you've got long-running television shows starring gay characters who still don't manage to kiss in primetime ever.
Will and Grace, yes.
Right. Yeah. And... So with this movie, though, you've actually got, it's basically being billed, and, I guess it's fair to say it is more a love story than it is a quote-unquote gay cowboy movie.
Yeah.
Well, even though, in fact, the two characters never, throughout the course of the film, never actually say that they love each other.
Really?
They talk about this thing, and why can't I quit you, and use a variety of statements that make it clear what's going on.
Yeah. Well,
I think it comes at just the right time. I think America is more open to something like this. I think the way it's packaged, so that people can point to it and say, look, this is not a movie about gay sex. This is a movie about love between two men. Mm-hmm. And I think that is going to open a door, and we're going to see more, realistic treatments of positive gay relationships in movies.
Yeah, well, it's nice to open up the more for more movies that reflect the country as a whole versus just, the typical romance between a man and a woman and all that. Now in the movie, a question for Chatham. Now, I don't know if you know this. Do Ledger and Gyllenhaal actually kiss in the movie?
My understanding is that there's a good awful amount of kissing and skin-to-skin contact.
You're kidding me. What are these two? Now, what kind of career?
I mean, let's be honest. I talk about this being the right time in American society for a movie like this. It is still at the point where there are a lot of people who are not going to see it simply because it's got two guys, two guys making out. And, I certainly know people who just reject it out of hand because of that. And it's worth noting that even on blog critics, most of the reviews I've seen so far have come from either women or gay men.
Yeah, well, I mean, with Ledger and Gyllenhaal, I like this. Hopefully their careers will be intact after this movie is gone. I have a feeling that their acting credentials will be actually still intact when they get through this movie. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think that is the difference between now and, say, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks, risked an awful lot doing the Philadelphia movie, Philadelphia. And in this movie, they go a lot farther. But I think that Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal should come through with a sex symbol status intact.
Wow. Well, we'll see. I mean, and also you want to talk about Richard Pryor. It's too bad about him. I mean, he's been sick for years with the, MS, Richard Pryor?
Yeah, multiple sclerosis.
Yeah,
right.
And then he did the whole burning thing while he's rebasing the cocaine and all that. So, I mean, he did open the doors a lot. It can be said it wouldn't be an Eddie Murphy if there wasn't a Richard Pryor first. You know what I'm saying?
Very true.
Yeah, and then again, it wouldn't be a Richard Pryor if there wasn't a Red Fox.
Very true as well, absolutely. You get a steady progression to where, are we at the point where movies can be truly colorblind. I think in some cases they are. In most cases, not yet.
Yeah, I think so. Well, we're getting there.
We're a lot closer than we used to be, and he's a big part of that.
Yeah, we're getting there. And also, we want to talk about the DVD, Peter Jackson's King Kong production diaries.
Yeah, I find this really fascinating.
Yeah.
We have... Okay, back when Lord of the Rings were being filmed, Peter Jackson, of course, the mastermind responsible for that, took a huge risk, although it's hard to even imagine it was a risk now. But they were very secretive during filming. They actually sued a guy for leaking secrets about the filming.
Really?
To try to shut him up, shut down his website. I mean, they were hardcore secretive, didn't want any screenshots getting out, any information about casting. Very, very secretive.
Huh.
And now with King Kong, for some reason, somehow, Peter Jackson has done a complete about-face. So that not only are they not suing to shut people up, he's actually filming segments and releasing them for free on the web to document every step of the production.
Wow. Well,
so all along you've been able to see exactly how the movie was being made.
Wow. Well, I mean, I read somewhere or saw somewhere on TV that he actually had put in money, millions of his own money, to finish this movie. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So maybe he's hoping...
He went a bit over budget.
Yeah, and maybe he's hoping with this DVD and everything else to help get the word out about the movie, and he'll recoup all that money. You know, I mean, sure, it's going to be a blockbuster hit. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. And also, you want to talk about Bryan Singer is doing the same thing with the new Superman movie. So
exactly.
Now, it's
called Superman Returns. That's the same sort of thing as, say, a Batman Begins. It's a revisiting an existing well-known franchise that may have faltered and trying to kind of rejuvenate it. Mm-hmm. And he's doing the exact same thing in terms of creating production diaries, releasing photos, releasing video clips, releasing script information, maybe not quite as open as Peter Jackson, but is definitely pursuing that as a way to market the movie. And I think that's really going to pay off. And I think it marks a big change in how directors are approaching fans.
Yeah, well, now they're including them. Instead of shunning the internet or the bloggers, they're involving them. They know the power of the blogs can get more of interest in these movies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for a good movie, of course, you can generate a lot of buzz going in. For a bad movie, well, not so much.
Yeah, well, I thought it was good. I saw a sneak preview of the Superman, where they did a PR trailer for this movie, the Superman movie, where they had the kid that's playing Superman flying around, and they had actually the music from the original movie, and Marlon Brando talk. I thought, wow, that is going to be great to see because, you know, Marlon Brando is dead, of course, and he was the Jor-El in the first one, and he's talking to this Superman, which I thought it's going to be really, it's a connection between the two movies. I think it's going to be really great.
Yeah, that'll be pretty neat to see.
Yeah, and then...
I'm pretty impressed by this move in this direction. I hope it keeps up for future moves, especially the big blockbusters, because it seems like every year we get, you know, big, huge blockbuster, lots of explosions, you know, big giant apes, whatever.
Yeah.
Show me something new. And I think that this idea of production diaries, or in this case even releasing that on DVD, the DVD came out today.
Mm-hmm.
The movie comes out tomorrow, or tonight at midnight, I guess, in some areas.
Yeah. Well, it's actually Darth Marley's talking about the Superman thing. He's saying they were talking about digitally reducing the... the bulge in Ralph's Superman's crotch.
they've done a lot of stuff like that. They actually, Lindsay Lohan got reduced a bit for the Herbie movie.
Oh, you're kidding. I didn't know about that.
They had to go through, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds of frames and give her a bit of a reduction surgery.
I mean, the Batman movies, we had all the thing about the nipples and the whatever the hell, the cup and everything. Now we have the bulge in Superman's crotch now. What the hell? But maybe the Superman movie will appeal to the Brokeback Mountain crowd, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there are quite a few rumors running around.
That's the connection right there.
Brandon Routh might in fact be playing for that team and so on and so
there
forth.
There you go.
So.
And then also the King Kong movie sounds like it's gonna you about the review of the movie El Bicho can't stop.
El Bicho, yeah.
And he claims
El Bicho's quite a popular blog critic, excellent writer, and he managed to get a sneak peek of King Kong, and I think raving is an accurate term to describe how he feels about this film. He's talking about how, you know, King Kong is the king of the jungle, Peter Jackson is the king of directors. This is a home run, hit out of the park, the perfect film in every way.
Wow.
Well, we'll see. I mean, last week I was saying, I don't know, this movie had like a really super buildup. I was thinking, well, wouldn't it be funny if this turned out to be a big flop? You know what I mean? Nobody cared about some big ape climbing up the Empire State Building and getting an enema. You know what I'm saying?
It's hard to imagine rejuvenating the idea. I mean, it was, 1933, I think, when the original came out.
Yeah, and Fay Wray.
Yeah, times have changed.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm a little skeptical, but El Bicho goes a long way toward convincing me that Peter Jackson might manage to pull this off.
Yeah, well, you know what? It really would be cool that while King Kong's climbing the Empire State Building, if the Enterprise would drop down and fire a couple of phasers at him, you know? That'd be kind of a new twist on the old classic.
A little cross-genre promotion. Yeah,
you
might have Harry Potter flying circles around him or something.
Yeah, that'd be the only way to liven up the Star Trek franchise. And also, I want to talk about the Late Show, Craig Ferguson. Now, that show, he's getting a sidekick, huh? And you're not going to believe who it is.
It's the center square from Hollywood Squares. It is Fred Rated from the old Federated commercials, which ran through most of the country. Shadow Stevens.
Yes, he's going to be Craig Ferguson's. So he's going to be his Ed McMahon, huh?
Just exactly right.
That sounds like Santa Claus. That sounds like Santa more than Ed McMahon.
I'm sorry.
You are correct, number one. Kimo Savi, you're not correct. Everybody's got to do their cards. Ed McMahon impersonation.
That's right.
Well, now, why does he need a...
We've actually got a Craig Ferguson stalker who's angry at blog critics.
Uh-oh.
She's editor for the site, and she has, I don't know how to describe it other than a bizarre fixation with the man.
Craig Ferguson? I mean, that show is okay, but, I mean, why do they think he needs a sidekick? Is he like, missing something from his show?
I've only watched the show a couple of times myself, and, you know, I mean, he's got a great accent. I'll give him that, but mark me down as a David Letterman, Conan O'Brien guy, you know?
Conan had what the hell's Andy Richter for years, and he got rid of him. But Ferguson would be the only one with a sidekick. You know, they've all done without him. Yeah. Well, I guess what's his name on Letterman could be kind of a sidekick, but not Paul Schaefer.
Paul
but
Schaefer.
He's not sitting next to him.
It'll be kind of interesting to see. They may just be trying to draw in more viewers. Not everybody's as dedicated as Joan.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's just daily updates on the show.
Really?
It's really disturbing.
You never know. I mean, because they said that when Oprah was on Letterman, that the ratings went through the roof and actually trickled down to Craig Ferguson. Actually, the Late Late Show got its highest ratings apparently in years from the trickle down of Oprah. So, you know, more people are seeing his show. I mean,
I have a theory about that.
Huh?
I have a theory that people fall asleep during Dave Letterman and their TVs register still watching Craig Ferguson.
That could be. Yeah, because this show's okay. You know what? I liked it when they had Tom Snyder on after Letterman. I thought that was outstanding. You know?
Really?
Yeah, he did the late.
I never got into Tom Snyder.
Oh,
myself.
No. Yeah, he was. And I understand the man's a little ill right now, but I mean.
Yeah, I have heard that.
Yeah, but, you know, there's all these shows. I mean, Craig Ferguson, you got Conan, and who's the other one now?
Jimmy Kimmel, my personal favorite.
There you go. Yeah, he does an outstanding job. It's about time he's getting some credit. You know, he's doing remarkable with his program. I wish they'd move him up so he's up against Leno and Letterman dead on and may move Nightline behind his program. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's all your topic. Anything else you want to mention before we let you go?
Well, we did. I know I didn't warn you, but we did have the Golden Globe nominees announced today.
Ah.
That came after I sent you an email this morning outlining things to talk about, but there are quite a few good films up for awards, so I guess people can start thinking about, you know, Best Director, for example. Peter Jackson is already nominated for King Kong. The movie comes out tomorrow.
Unbelievable, huh?
His nomination was announced today.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg from Munich. That film's not even due out for another couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, because all the television critics, who nominates them? Oh, the TV critics, don't they?
The TV critics.
The motion, whatever the hell it is, they nominate them. Hopefully, I don't know. Now, y'all gonna run some kind of a contest on Blog Critics for the Golden Globes?
I think we ought to have some sort of a pool and see who can get the highest number of accurate choices.
There you go. And give away some kind of DVD or some DVD of Battlestar Galactica or something, you know?
Yeah, we've always got things to give away. I think that the easy one's going to be Best Performance by an Actress in a Television Series, Musical, or Comedy.
Ah.
Four of the five candidates are from Desperate Housewives.
Oh, there you go. Well, who knows?
So but, smart money is probably not on Mary Louise Parker for weeds.
I mean, watch that show, but I mean, I don't know.
I've never seen that
show. No, I mean, it's, but like a lot of these things, I haven't even heard of them. I mean, what the hell? I have these movies, what are they? Mrs. Henderson Presents, yeah, I haven't seen that one. Kung Fu Hustle, I mean, I don't know.
Oh, that was a good movie. I enjoyed that.
But anyway, Philip, we'll let you go.
Okay.
All right. Philip,
thanks very much, Sean.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We hope to have you on again soon.
Yeah, I think we're going to rotate around through four or five of us.
Very good.
Keep you happy.
Very good. Thank you very much, sir.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you. And that was Philip Wynn of blogcritics.org with quite an extensive and enlightening discussion about Narnia and Brokeback Mountain and Peter King Kong and The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. So, it's interesting. And the Golden Globes did come out. And let's see, the best picture nominee for drama is Brokeback Mountain, of course. The Constant Gardener, what the hell is that movie? Good Night and Good Luck, that's the George Clooney movie about the journalism. A History of Violence, I never saw that one. Match Point, was that like the Match Game or something? Actress, Maria Bello, A History of Violence. Felicity Huffman, I heard that's supposed to, she played a damn good role. She's playing a woman playing a man playing a woman or something like that. I don't know. In Transamerica, Gwyneth Paltrow and for Proof, Charlize Theron for North Country. Now that I don't know, I didn't see that one because that felt like a ripoff of Norma Rae, whatever the hell it was to me with Sally Field. So I didn't want to see that because you already know about that how that's gonna end. And then we had Zee Zhang, Memories of a Geisha. Now I don't think that movie's out yet either, but it's amazing how they nominate these people and the movies aren't even out yet. Best actor for motion picture nominee for Golden Globe is Russell Crowe for Cinderella Man. Now that was a flop, and I saw that they didn't. I remember when it was out, they offered the money back guarantee or something like that. After you saw the movie and like it, the theater would give you your money back. And I saw just a week ago they reissued the movie. So, and what's Dick saying? Any word about the Jesus Christ Serial Rapist? Any word on that movie? What? What movie is that? I don't think it's listed in the Golden Globes. Let me see here.
Yeah, it just came out on DVD today.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see it in the Golden Globes. Best Picture, Musical, or Comedy, Mrs. Henderson Presents, Pride and Prejudice, The Producers. Oh, man, I'm sick of that one. The Squid and the Whale. What the hell movie is that? Walk the Line. Now, that one I could see because everybody's giving it good reviews. It's a Johnny Cash movie and everything. Pride and Prejudice, that's that movie with Jane Austen's movie or something like that, maybe. Actress, music, or comedy, Judi Dench. Man, that woman's in everything. I saw her in some show on PBS the other night, too. Mrs. Henderson Presents, Keira Knightley for Pride and Prejudice, Laura Linney, The Squid and the Whale, Sarah Jessica Parker for The Family Stone, and Reese Witherspoon for Walk the Line. Yeah, I'd say Walk the Line is going to do pretty well because her and what the hell's his name, Joaquin Phoenix, all had to sing. It's one condition that Johnny Cash put on the movie that he did not want them lip syncing to his songs or June Carter Cash's songs. He wanted both to be able to sing their songs. So I thought that was interesting. Best actor for musical or comedy, Pierce Brosnan, The Matador, Jeff Daniels, The Squid and the Whale, Johnny Depp, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, that won't win, Nathan Lane, The Producers, Cillian Murphy, Breakfast on Pluto, and Joaquin Phoenix, Walk the Line. Oh, boy. That'd be interesting. I don't know. That's pretty tight there. I don't know who's going to win that one. Supporting actress, Scarlett Johansson of Match Point, Shirley MacLaine, In Her Shoes, North Country, Rachel, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Michelle Williams for Brokeback Mountain. Boy, they're right. That movie's starting to rack up a lot of critical raves about that movie. Best Supporting Actor, George Clooney, Syriana. Matt Dillon in Crash. Will Ferrell, The Producers. Paul Giamatti, Cinderella Man. Bob Hoskins is Mrs. Henderson Presents. I never did see Cinderella Man. I always thought that movie was a ripoff of Rocky. And Giamatti did a poor Burgess Meredith imitation. You know what I'm saying? Rocky was filming here last week, 2 weeks ago. Rocky, the movie's actually called Rocky Balboa, and they're filming it at the Mandalay Bay Event Center, and they're looking for people to be extras in the fight scenes and everything. They're shooting it downtown. They're shooting it or at the Mandalay Bay for 4 days. They're shooting down there. So where are we at here? Best Golden Globe nomination for Best director in a motion picture. Woody Allen, Match Point. George Clooney, Good Night and Good Luck. Peter Jackson, King Kong. Ang Lee for Brokeback Mountain. Fernando Morales for The Constant Gardener. And Steven Spielberg, that's what he's talking about, for Munich. Now, Munich looks like it's going to be an interesting movie. It's based on the 72 Olympics when the Israeli Olympic team was killed. And the after effects of the Munich. And they hunt down the killers and everything else. Best motion picture screenplay for the Golden Globe. Woody Allen for Match Point. George Clooney and Grant Heslov, Good Night and Good Luck. Blah, blah, blah. Some movie called Crash. Tony Kushner and Eric Roth for Munich, and Larry McMurtry for Brokeback Mountain again for best screenplay. Wow. Foreign language. Who cares about foreign language movies? You know. Original score: Syriana, King Kong, Narnia, and Memories of a Geisha. Original song from Brokeback Mountain: A Love That Will Never Grow Old. Oh, that's nice. There's Nothing Like a Show on Broadway from the producers. Wunderkind from the Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, The Witch, and The Wardrobe. Where else? And TV. Go ahead. Oh, somebody there? No? Oh, I was waiting for Judy to call in from the Sci-Fi Buzz. I'm getting to the TV shows. Here we go. TV for Golden Globes drama series is Commander-in-Chief on ABC, which is okay. I've seen it a couple times. It's not bad. It's kind of like a West Wing, but with the woman in there instead of Martin Sheen, Gina Davis, and they added, what the hell is his name, Mark Paul Gosselaar from NYPD Blue. He's in it now. They changed producers. It's Stephen Bochco, I believe, has taken over producing Commander-in-Chief. Apparently, there were production overruns, and the episodes were late film, late getting to the network. So Bochco has now taken over the program from the creator. I believe it was Rod Lurie was the creator and the original producer of Commander-in-Chief. And also nominated for Golden Globe drama series Grey's Anatomy. I've yet to see that one. Lost, I've seen that like twice. It's okay. Prison Break on Fox, and then Rome on HBO was nominated for drama for a Golden Globe. And Best Television Actress, Golden Globe nominee, Patricia Arquette for Medium. That was all right. I saw the 3D show, and that was horrendous. I'm glad I didn't spend any money for the glasses. Glenn Close for The Shield. Now, she's off the show in January. She's not going to come back to The Shield. Forrest Whitaker is now the new chief of the division there on The Shield starting in January. Glenn Close. Gina Davis has been nominated for a Commander-in-Chief. Kira Sedgwick for The Closer. And Polly Walker for Rome. So Closer, that's the one that's on TNT. So I believe it's coming back. It's coming back in January, I believe. Best Actor nominee for Golden Globe: Patrick Dempsey from Grey's Anatomy, Matthew Fox for Lost, Hugh Laurie for House, Wentworth Miller for Prison Break, and Kiefer Sutherland for 24. I'd like to see Kiefer Sutherland win that award. That'd be kind of nice. Dempsey, I don't know. Grey's name is like a soap opera. Matthew Fox, Laurie, House, it's like Quincy. The prison movie, the show, I don't know. But Kiefer Sutherland, yeah, that 24 is a pretty good show. I like that. Let's see, the best television series nominee for Golden Globe, musical or comedy, Curb Your Enthusiasm on HBO, Desperate Housewives. Oh, man, anything but that show. Entourage on HBO. Everybody Hates Chris on UPN. My Name is Earl on NBC, and Weeds on Showtime. Oh, man, that's going to have another category. None of the above. How about that? I never seen Earl, and I haven't yet to see Curb Your Enthusiasm, but Desperate. Oh, man, I hope that doesn't win that one. Golden Globe television nominee for Golden Globe for TV series actress, Marcia Cross for Desperate Housewives. Terry Hatcher, Desperate Housewives. Felicity Huffman for Desperate Housewives. Oh, hell. Eva Longoria, Desperate Housewives. She should win it because she's hot. Mary Louise Parker for Weeds. Give it to Eva Longoria and piss the rest of them off over there on Desperate Housewives, I'd say. Best Actor for television series Golden Globe. Zach Braff for Scrubs. Stephen Carroll for The Office. Larry David for Curb Your Enthusiasm. Jason Lee for My Name is Earl, and Charlie Sheen for 2.5. Anybody but Charlie Sheen, I'd say, should win that award. 2.5, man, that's like a damn, what the hell's that show years ago on NBC, My Two Dads? Come on, I wouldn't give it to him. Golden Globe, miniseries or movie, Empire Falls on HBO, Into the West on TNT, which is like 16-hour Western miniseries they ran. Lukawana Blues on HBO. Sleeper Cell on Showtime. Now, that show just started, and already they're nominated for a Golden Globe. Viva Blackpool on BBC America, and Warm Springs on HBO. Oh, man. I don't know. I'd say Into the West. I don't know. That's a couple hours of that. It wasn't too bad. Actress, Golden Globe for miniseries or movie. Halle Berry for Their Eyes, We're Watching God. Kelly MacDonald, The Girl in the Cafe. Whatever the hell her name is, Apatha Murkerson for Lackawanna Blues. Cynthia Nixon for Warm Springs. And Mira Sorvino for Human Trafficking. Let's see here. Halle Berry, she's got enough awards, hasn't she? I'd say Mira Sorvino. Best Actor, Golden Globe, miniseries or movie, Kenneth Branagh for Warm Springs, Ed Harris for Empire Falls, Jonathan Rhys Meyers for Elvis, I don't remember that, what the hell was that about, Elvis I guess, but when was that on, Bill Nighy for The Girl in the Cafe, and Donald Sutherland for Human Trafficking, that'd be interesting. Donald Sutherland is on Commander in Chief playing the Speaker of the House against Gina Davis's President McKenzie, whatever the hell her last name is, on the show. Golden Globe supporting actress, miniseries or movie, Candace Bergen for Boston Legal, Cameron Manheim for Elvis. Who's she playing? Probably playing his mother, I think. Sandra Oh for Grey's Anatomy, Elizabeth Perkins for Weeds, and Joanne Woodward, who is Paul Newman's wife, for Empire Falls. Candace Bergen, no, she's won enough awards for the other damn show she did. What the hell is that show? She played that Murphy Brown. Cameron Manheim, she never got any attention from where the hell that movie was. She was in Practice, so yeah, give her the award for Elvis. Probably the last award she ever gets. Supporting actor, miniseries or movie, Naveen Andres for Lost. Paul Newman, Empire Falls. Jeremy Piven for Entourage. Randy Quaid for Elvis. And Donald Sutherland for Commander in Chief. Wow. I don't know. Paul Newman. Ooh, he's in a tough one. It could get either Donald Sutherland, Paul Newman. Randy Quaid, nah, he won't get it. He's got the Saturday Night Live thing hanging over his head. I don't know, Donald Sutherland. That'd be kind of cool. Maybe cool to have him win an award for miniseries and have his son win it for Best Actor, because his son is nominated, I believe, isn't he? Yeah, Keith, that'd be kind of cool, because I like Donald Sutherland. I mean, he's a hell of an actor. I always did like him. But so we'll see what happens there. And I don't know if I'm going to go see that Brokeback Mountain. I don't know how that happened. Are you going to go see it? Everybody, you go see it. I like to see how many people, I'm going to go see, they go up to the screen and they say, oh no, I'm going to go see whatever the hell movie it is. And then they sneak in to see that. They want to admit they're going to go see that damn movie. I don't know. I definitely want to see Narnia. I want to go see Syriana. That's supposed to be an excellent movie with Clooney and Dylan and them. That should be good. But no, I don't see anything for cable, but we'll see. And actually, since Judy hasn't called in, we'll just go through what she wanted to talk about. She wanted to go through what was in the Battlestar Galactica Companion. She wanted to talk about that. There we go. That Starbuck and Baltar in the Companion. And if Scully or anybody else wants to call in, we could talk about the Companion or whatever you want. 1-866-587-6257. We got about 12 minutes left. In the Companion, Judy wanted to mention that Starbuck and Baltar start flirting with each other in the episode Water, which leads their get-together in Cobol's Last Gleaming. This plotline was in Ron Moore's mind when he wrote Water. So that's interesting. So he built up to that. He started that in Water and ended. He had the storyline kind of threading its way through the series until Cobol's Last Gleaming. And then, of course, they had them in bed together, obviously. And then she was pretending it was Lee in bed with her. And then the previews are starting to run already, too, for the new episode to start January 6th on Sci-Fi at 10 o'clock Pacific. And it looks damn good. So we'll see. And Bastille Day was one of the earliest story ideas proposed during the miniseries by Ron Moore. When asked for a variety of ideas, he brought up the prison ship, which was on the original Galactica, and an idea which turned into the episode. Everybody said that, so now it turns out everybody was right, that the original series prison ship episode turned into Bastille Day. So that made sense. And we had Tony Graffia, there's the Galactica flying through. There you go. The co-executive producer actually nicknamed the episode Bastille Day because the plotline reminded her of the historic march on the Bastille, which triggered the French Revolution. Tony was also the first person to write an episode apart from Ron Moore. So that's nice and interesting that Bastille Day actually is a nod towards the March on Bastille, which triggered the French Revolution. Well, that's interesting. So I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, who's this?
This is Judy from Sci-Fi Buzz.
Oh, hi, how you doing?
It's been some day.
Oh, okay. Well, we're just going through your talking points. I was hoping you'd call in. I thought, well, she's busy. We'll just go through them and make sure you got the credit for it and everything.
Okay.
We're talking about about the Bastille Day, how it was Tony Graffia, named the episode after the is a historic nod towards the Bastille March, the French Revolution.
Yeah, with the French Revolution. I found from reading this book, there's a lot of really good tidbits in it.
Yeah.
In terms of what's going on behind the scenes, how they're coming up with these plots and stuff, and what they're going through.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I haven't found it yet out here in Vegas. And then also you said that, that's what's interesting, Elosha was originally envisioned as a male, and the part and the part was offered to Richard Hatch as a cameo appearance in the miniseries. He declined. So then he offered him Zarek. But I thought that was interesting that it was originally supposed to be a man. Wow.
And he was originally named Peter Zarek and not Tom Zarek.
Hmm.
And it was even released that way because I found it on the Galactica blog.
Really?
Yeah, one of the old Galactica blogs back when the miniseries was about to come out, they were advertising him as Peter Zarek. Huh. But if for some reason it didn't pass the legal department.
Ah, I wonder why. I wonder what that's all about. I mean, if there's some kind of a actor with the same name or something, or who knows.
And I don't know.
Yeah, and then he said in the first draft of Bastille, Callie was supposed to be killed.
Yeah, she was supposed to be killed, which of course would have thrown off everything else.
Yeah, and she wouldn't have, which would have changed a whole lot later on. She couldn't have shot Boomer. So,
exactly.
Yeah, so that was interesting. So they actually were supposed to kill her off on Bastille Day. Wow. That's a nice little tidbit. I don't think anybody knew about that unless they read the book. An act of contrition, the scenes of Kara crashing at the beginning of each segment is deliberately done. Ron Moore felt it was a metaphor for her life falling apart. Yeah,
right.
I guess so, because the Viper flew apart, and then she flew out of the hatch. You know?
And she fell onto the planet. They also had this flashback where also set up the way they did it in The Getaway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where he originally got the idea to do the flashbacks.
Really? Well, that's interesting. And then he said this was also the episode where Leigh and Kara were supposed to have a one-night stand, but it was dropped because they felt it was too early to introduce it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, fan fiction writers picked up on that and took off with it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, then in the sneak previews for the new season, they show Leigh Adama with his eyes open or something, like he's dead. Or I don't know what the hell's going on. And then I don't know what it is. It's a strange scene. So I don't know if he's going to die or something's going to happen to him, or he's going to look like he's dead in the new episodes. You know? So an extra.
The new promos are very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And then Darth Marley is in the chat room saying that the news is that the DVD with the first 10 episodes will not have an expanded Pegasus version. So they're going to have the regular version you saw on TV, not an extended version of Pegasus, I guess. So.
Oh, that sucks.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I mean, they'll do it in the whole season DVD later on after the second 10 have aired. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They said Kara met the actor who played Zach about 2 minutes before the shoot in the trailer.
Yeah, where they're supposed to do this love scene flashback.
Wow.
You know, and she kind of said, well, you know, hi, I'm Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah.
I'm happy to meet you, and let's go. We're going to go make love now.
Well, that's
I cracked up when I read that.
Yeah, I mean, well, I thought it was good she was able to pull it off, and so was the actor who played Zach. I mean, but good for them.
He did a good job of having met him 2 minutes beforehand. He was having his full body makeup on.
Yeah. And then and also you said that the actors on the set have a raffle on Fridays called $5 Friday. And then Katie won on the day that they shot the Zach Kara love scene. And after the love scene, she got paid $300 in $1 bills and quarters. She felt she was a prostitute.
Right, exactly.
Well, yeah, because she just met the guy, and then she hops in bed and has sex with him. And then, he gets paid $300 from the cast and the crew for her love scene. I don't know. I pay her a little bit more than that, but that's just me. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was also reading another part where, you know, they had this whole thing about how Dirk Benedict doesn't like the show and this and that. And actually, Ron Moore was kicking around the idea of having him appear in Cobalt's Last Gleaming Part 2.
Really?
And his draft of the episode script saw Baltar encountering a cigar-smoking character who introduced himself as God.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was supposed to be the original Starbuck, Dirk Benedict.
Yeah. Because we actually, what's his name? Conan Gruhls mentioned that as well. So it was confirmed in the book?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, confirmed in the book.
Very cool.
On page 94.
Very cool. Very cool. I don't have the book yet. And then Dave Weddle named Dr. Cottle.
Did you know you can actually win this book from me for free?
Uh-oh.
Okay, if you enter the Lee Adama is a Cylon Writing Challenge,
there you go.
Greatest.net, you can have this book shipped to you.
Wow.
And for one time, I mean, for absolutely no cost to you, and you're guaranteed to get it just before New Year's.
Wow, that'd be cool.
If you win.
Yes,
if.
And then moving on, we've got the Lee Adama's Assailant Challenge is still running to the end of the month.
To the end of the month, we're getting a lot of good stories in all categories.
How's the podcasting gonna coming along?
We're still working on that. My voice, I'm not totally satisfied with it, so we ordered some software that actually reads the story for you.
Really?
And it's AT&T Human Voice.
Wow.
And you have your choice between a British accent or an American accent. Mm. And it didn't cost very much money. It takes your text, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Kurzweil system that blind people use, where it would take the text and read it, but they've actually incorporated that. That whole system used to cost like thousands of dollars and shows how far technology has come.
Yeah.
And it also shows how old I am, because I was around when it cost thousands and thousands of dollars, and I think it sells for like $49.95 now.
Wow, that's cool.
So we got that software, and we've been fooling around with the speed and the intonation and stuff, and to get it set up so that it will actually read the story for us and turn it into an MP3.
Yeah. And actually, Darth Marley is saying that Sosinus was killed in a deleted scene from the miniseries. Oh, when Alonzo Yarson was on, he actually gave that away as well when he was on an interview. And also, you want to talk about the new blogs, Starbuck Rocks. Jabblogs.com/Starbucks?
Yeah, because my name is Judas Allison Brandy, and that's where we got the word jab from, Jablog. People were joking around. So I got the domain name, and we're going to put Starbuck Rocks and Apollo is Great. And, you know, with certain blogging software, you can't do categories, so I was fooling around with WordPress, but it keeps crashing on me.
Oh,
so,
really?
And, of course, Blogger is the old standby, but you can't break it down into categories. So I had this really bizarre idea that you could set up as many blogs as you want, and those actually become your categories.
Wow.
So Starbuck Rocks is all about Starbucks.
Yeah.
You know, and Apollo is Great is going to be all about Apollo, the character of Apollo and the actor, Jamie Bamber. So that as I get news, you're able to just blog to these various blogs, and then have a complete blog which kind of takes all of the news and puts it back together. But some people just want to read about Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah.
You know, they just want to get news on Katie Sackhoff.
Absolutely.
So
I want to hear all about Katie Sackhoff. I want to hear everything she's doing.
Yeah, so then you just go over there, and it just got started. And I've set up a number of blogs, and actually one of the podcasts that you did had a guy on it who was doing the blog empire.
Duncan Riley, yes.
Yeah, Duncan Riley with the blog empire, which is where I first heard it, and I first got the idea. I'm actually not running a blog empire. I'm actually using Blogger to make categories out of blogs.
Well, you're getting close to the blog empire with your site.
Yeah, I probably will wind up with the blog empire.
Yeah. and then you want to talk about the Stargate Atlantis book. Martha Wells, she's the author of the new unreleased Stargate Atlantis novel. Was it Reliquary?
Yeah, Reliquary.
And she's uploaded the part of the first chapter on her website, which is MarthaWells.com/reliquary.htm. So it should be interesting. Mm-hmm. And then you can also...
And you'll also find that in my Stargate News
There
section.
You go. Yeah, I mean, well, hopefully these books are good, but I just can't see this Galactica novel. I don't know. Hopefully it'll do well, but I don't know.
I hope it'll do well.
Yeah. And anything else from SciFiBuzz.com before we let you go? We're almost at the end of the time here.
No. I just wanted to, you know, stop in. I've had an incredibly horrendous day, but you always make it better.
Well, thank you very much. We're glad we can bring a little light into everybody's lives here on the internet. You know what I'm saying? That's all I live for.
Okay, great.
Well, thank you, Judy.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Judy from the sciencefictionbuzz.com website with our science fiction discussion report. That was very good. I was a little there you go. Ooh, that's devastating noise there. Wow. Anyway, and that was nice to hear a little about the series. I'll have to get that companion because we're almost out of time. Next week, up next is who knows what's next because they're not here yet. Tomorrow morning at 10 is Daily Noise with Khan and Diggs. Friday is Spank Wagon.